Project Next. Uncovering the trends that are shaping our future. And hello, darlings, and oh my goodness. Oh, how you can get caught up in the craziness of Los Angeles. Very sorry to be having Roy in a state of a perplexed nature as to where I am. Well, I am here with you live here, KPFK. It is a lovely holiday season. How wonderful it is. And so, my gosh, I thought, why not go live? Why not bring on one of our mavericks, a media, the man that is the master of our solar government, the man that is that has brought us ION, the man that has brought us Finnegan's Wake and has been trying to wake us up to the influence of our extended bodies and that mystery body that we are still trying to understand and emerge. And maybe we're going to get some insight into that tonight on KPFK. Bob Dobbs is with us here. And who knows, maybe 1 hour, maybe two. Well, it's obviously it's going to be two, because once we start getting rolling with Bob, it's just going to be an amazing, captivating night of media, something that resonates with him, but also extends out into every single cranial cavity, which is this great thing on Pacifica and KPFK. So it is wonderful, as always, to be here. And to bring you things that, you know, that challenge, that push those buttons, that expand our horizons, and invite every single emotion in the spectrum here. So, yes, I am catching my breath. I am simmering down and waiting for Bob to arrive, and I believe he has joined us here from those amazing islands in the Pacific. The Hawaiian Islands is where he is roasting himself now. And so, you know, we are just going to be having open lines, open discussion. We're going to be sitting there and trying to pick Bob's brain about the architecture of this world now that he is the overseer of the world in that satellite capacity. And also trying to understand exactly how media, for one, is a friend of ours, but also a collapsing nature that's inside us. And maybe some of those reductive voices that, in a sense, stymie or stifle or undermine us being able to come into our power, as ION has said a number of times, and coming into our power. So it is just going to be open lines, good, clean fun with the ambassador of the galactic environment, Bob Dobbs, and you, loves, here on KPFK 90.7 FM in Los Angeles. Bob, hi, are you there?
Yes, good morning, Evan. I'm here. I'm waiting.
Well, thank you for hanging out there in the wings. I was sitting there going at least light speed, not the speed of thought, but at least light speed up the freeways of Los Angeles to come up into these hallowed grounds here. And so it is wonderful to convene again here and to have you on, Bob, in this holiday season, because I'm feeling jovial and you always bring that light, lovely, frothy feeling to all discussions that you are in, Bob.
Yes, I was. You didn't call me right at 12, so I went online and started listening to KPFK. So I was listening to Roy stumble around and wonder and explain Tom Hartman and Nixon, and got did a coup or something, and Romney did a coup, and then you were there.
That coup, fortunately, did not stop the trajectory of my little Yaris as I was flying up the freeway. Just got caught a little bit behind this, you know, jump forward, fall back kind of thing. I'm telling you, trying to get all of this sequenced in the correct manner. And so apologies to all of our listening public and to Roy for having him think that, my goodness, I wouldn't be here. Of course I would be here. And fortunately, I have you, Bob, and we're just going to have a great amount of fun trying to decipher exactly all of the goodness that you always bring. And I'm telling you, Bob, still, you know, at this point, I think that our lovely public doesn't understand the weight and the actual impact and power that is Bob Dobbs, because I know that you have been holding court. And when you gave out a telephone number and your website and people can come and speak to you on a daily basis, and the questions that they came to you, for one, was to reestablish you are Bob Dobbs, and what exactly does that mean? Does that puzzle you, Bob, after all of these years, that people still aren't able to reconcile what you represent?
Well, when I found out that Ion would not tell me what I was or represent, he was nervous about saying it or held back, then I realized, oh, I'm a big deal. I'm a question. Even non-physical can't really pin me down. So I tolerate the little people running around and worrying about me, wondering about me. But, Evan, I started to think that maybe I was causing this delay because I came up with an idea to give you an amazing exclusive on the way to the beach today. And so I have something, we have something to do very seriously for a moment here. You realize that right now is starting the 50th anniversary of the Kennedy assassination.
The 50th, yes, that's right, 62. Yes, it is.
Yeah.
Yes, it is.
63. But 63, the 63. Planning for the Kennedy assassination started around this time, in the fall of 62. And so from this point to 63 is a 12-month span, and since the planning is hoping to pull it off, what did they do to make it successful in that 12 months? So any point along those 12 months is the cause or the beginning.
Yes.
I will say this is the beginning of November 22nd, 63.
Very
this
good.
Is the year. This is the moment that then spans out for 12 months till we get November 22nd, 63, and the deed is done. So I thought I'd do something that I've never done, and actually tell you who did it.
Drum roll, please.
Yes. Bring on the Zappa music.
Let's play Big Swifty. I wish I had that. I'll try and pull it up on the internet while you are studying. What Zappa song is it?
Big Swifty.
Okay. Now,
Evan, I could have. You know what I do on my station? I now can go on Skype and come into your station, and I can play cuts on Achieve Radio. I could do it with you if we had time to set it up, but we won't bother. But I can do that. I can play stuff from my computer into your station.
Yes, well, you know, that is that's the amazing thing. Okay, here we go. Here we go. The Swifty. Unfortunately, it doesn't play as loud here as we want it. Okay, you know what, you go ahead and start this out, because this song is 10 minutes long, Bob.
I know. I'm going to grab my little thing and blast it through my computer.
Oh, no, don't do that. Don't do that. That would be a little bit too much. We'll go with the Big Swifty here, and we'll just have an avant-garde, good, clean, fun night.
Oh, I love your attempt. It was good. You just brought it up, and there it was, so quick.
Yes. Went and nabbed it.
Let's begin. The structure that was the real causing factor in the early 60s for the Kennedy assassination on the anthropomorphic or human being level, because there also was the effect of television,
yes,
which was another level. And I've talked about that a long time, but it's a little more risky to talk about who did what and point fingers. And so I'm going to say that there's a pentad. There's five people who were the hidden DNA, RNA of this cell. Okay?
Yes.
And those five people, according to a little birdie who met me once, actually a red cardinal told me this.
Hmm.
So since Gaia is a goddess and knows all, any little representative of Gaia must be telling the truth.
Hmm.
So here's what Gaia told me. Gaia said that you had a five-point pentad made up of Jimmy Hoffa, J. Edgar Hoover, Nelson Rockefeller, Curtis LeMay, and a couple of my associates on the Secret Council of Ten. Okay?
Okay.
You want to say that again?
Yes.
Who did I say?
Curtis LeMay.
Yeah.
Jimmy Hoffa.
Yeah.
J. Edgar Hoover.
Yeah.
And a couple of folks from your Secret Council of Ten.
And you missed one. Nelson Rockefeller.
Nelson Rockefeller.
Yeah. Now, of those five, only one person knew all the people involved, was in the position of knowing what LeMay was up to, what Hoover was up to, what Hoffa was up to, and what my buddies were up to. And that would be Nelson Rockefeller. Now, just to jump ahead, Nelson Rockefeller runs for president in 64. And there's a big swell in the Republican Party around Barry Goldwater to stop Nelson Rockefeller, because some people in the Republican Party knew what Nelson had done, and they were not going to have him be president. And he failed. Barry Goldwater became the candidate.
Hmm. Hmm. But they still wouldn't go and publicly put him on the rack. They just stopped his progression, even though he's still a senator for years.
Who didn't?
Well, you were saying that they undermined Nelson Rockefeller's progression up the chain, but yet he still remained in Congress.
No, he didn't. Nelson Rockefeller quit politics on that federal level and became governor of New York.
Okay. Maybe it's David Rockefeller. I know one of the Rockefellers has been.
Well, Jay Rockefeller, one of the sons.
Okay, very good.
Yeah, he's been in Congress for decades.
Decades.
But here's the interesting thing is, I thought you were saying, well, why didn't the Republican Party expose Nelson Rockefeller?
Right.
The reason, and, you know, the considered opinion of a lot of these people, a lot of people in government knew about this action before it was going to happen and all this. And you might want to look at, a lot of people thought that JFK needed killing because he, and some people had figured this out, had murdered Marilyn Monroe.
Hmm.
So there's some people who were thinking, this guy is out of control. So here you have the situation in 6364, whereas if you point at one person or somebody starts to get exposed, it was the considered opinion of the inner committees that civil war would break out in the United States.
Okay.
So they decided, well, let's keep this covered up for a while. And that's what I was part of. I was part of the cover-up, disinformation and things and misinformation. They decided that we got to deal with this tragedy of the Camelot vision and all that that meant to the people. That is more bearable than an actual tearing the country apart. So that was a practical decision. Whether it was right or not, you know, that's open to debate. But that's why it had and will continue to be covered up until recently. Now, here's another factor that's interesting. What's the role of Lee Harvey Oswald? All right? And here's the inside information on that. Lee Harvey Oswald was part of the assassination team, or the group that was telling him to take some shots at Kennedy. And he did this in up in Detroit or Chicago. I think it was Chicago. And he did it in Miami. If you become, you know, really well versed on the Kennedy assassination, you know there were a few attempts before Dallas. Have you ever heard of that?
Yes, I have, sir.
Right. So here's Lee Harvey Oswald is told to shoot at Kennedy in these two previous cities and not hit him. These are warning shots. And there's different scenarios about what Oswald thought he was protecting or what Kennedy was going awry on and had to be warned about, probably around Cuba and stuff like that. So he took these erroneous shots in Chicago, Miami, and then now he's in the Texas Depository Building, Book Depository, and he's assigned the same task of not hitting Kennedy. But unfortunately, he did hit him by accident, but it was not the only bullet that hit Kennedy. There was a couple of others, three others.
Yes.
One from the grassy knoll. There also was a shot from the Texas Book Depository Building, one floor up from Oswald.
Okay,
so here's Lee Harvey Oswald. You can have people like Gerald Ford and the Warren Commission say that, and stick to this for decades, that Lee Harvey Oswald, acting alone, killed Kennedy. And they knew that he was there and took shots and actually hit him. So they knew they were right in that point. Do you know what I mean?
Yes.
They could radiate confidence that they knew something that was real, and more than anybody else knew anything, and they would stick to that because they were right. Later, when information came out, other things that nobody knew about comes out, they can say, we didn't know that, but we were right about Lee Harvey Oswald. Okay. So you have the confidence of Ford and Warren and all these other people that Lee Harvey Oswald was acting alone. But Lee Harvey Oswald knew that he was not trying to kill Kennedy.
Mm-hmm.
He made a mistake. Or, whatever happened, he accidentally shot Kennedy. But he knew that he wasn't supposed to hit him.
Right.
So that explains his paranoia and saying he was a patsy and all this stuff.
Very good, very good.
And so here it is. You have the lone nut thing, as fragile as it is, has a bit of fact in it. And yet there's all these other circumstances that show that he couldn't have been the only guy involved in all this. So in that nebulosity, in that confusion, which is really how you run a disinformation campaign, you always have a bit of truth sprinkled all over the place. Nobody ever could totally figure it out. Because both sides in the ostensible argument were right.
Well, Bob, let's rewind a little bit. Why is it that Nelson Rockefeller had that perch to see what the Solar Council was doing and what Hoover and Hoffa and LeMay? And why was it those individuals? Why LeMay? Why was Curtis LeMay in on this?
Well, here's the person who caused it, really, was J. Edgar Hoover. He's the one who had the motive. He's the one who knew that Marilyn Monroe was murdered. He knew he had that on the Kennedy brothers. And he knew he was going to be fired. So a year before, and you see this in a couple of movies, like maybe JFK, they'll show these meetings between Hoover and Kennedy. As a matter of fact, there was a recent movie I just saw on Hoover, played by Leonardo Capaldo, what's his name? Leonardo
DiCaprio?
DiCaprio. Oh. And in that, they have the meetings of Hoover with Kennedy and with Robert Kennedy. So here's this tension around Hoover, and he knows he's going, and he's not going to go. So Hoover has to figure out what to do. So he took advantage of the Hoffa's Teamsters' paranoia about Hoffa being put away and the incursions into the secret activities of the Teamsters.
Okay. Why Curtis LeMay, though?
Okay. So now Hoffa and Hoover got something going, and they've got to get a few other institutions on board. So you get the financial, which is really overlapping into the international world. That's the Rockefeller Nexus. Then you have the military or CIA or DIA part. And then you have my associates who were always like the watchers in the fringe. You ever watch Fringe?
Yes.
Yeah. The watcher guys know what's going on. And they don't really get involved, but they're observing. And actually know what's going to happen. So some of the people that were my seniors in the Secret Council 10 were in that position. And these people decided that it was worth knocking out Kennedy. Now, here's another level, which is interesting, is that because television was having such a dramatic effect on the image of power and its history and its legacy, the power positions of the old Orwellian Big Brother world, like Rockefeller, Pentagon, and Hoover, not so much Hoffa, were, though on the common man level, the Hoffa and the Mafia, they ran the waterfronts, that kind of fear level.
Mm-hmm.
This fear thing that these historical entities could project was being superseded by television. So here's this guy Kennedy in the Rat Pack becoming coming across as having a new kind of discarnate electric disembodied charisma, which no power source had ever accounted for on the level of charisma they thought they had.
Yes.
So there's a collective threat by television. And that's why Kennedy was singled out as having a... They saw him as corrupting the television landscape because they knew he was a creep behind the scenes. And here's this guy looking like he's a glowing angel, a surfer boy, and yet they, Hoover and them, see this rot behind him. So they couldn't, they thought that the discarnate image of television had to be connected to the chemical body. They thought there was a connection. But Kennedy's image had nothing to do with the Kennedy chemical body. It was just he had the right image for a television, grainy, early color TV and late black and white, whereas Nixon didn't have that useful image.
Right.
So I don't want to get too much on that media level, because I want to point out the way the actual people involved, or I've been told were involved. Now, I don't know if any of this is true, all right? I don't know if any of this is true, but it was a pretty reliable red cardinal, pretty knowing red cardinal who told me this. The next point is that we learned from Ion that nobody can die unless they want to. They desire to leave. That's the only way you can die. So every death's a suicide. So where's the suicide in Kennedy? Why would he commit suicide? The suicide was, first of all, he was forced into the White House by his father, as his brother was later, and hated his father for the constrictions and having to be a politician. So he had that problem with his father. And then he had Kennedy himself. He decided, well, if I'm going to be president, I'm going to do something about the Federal Reserve and the Fed and the banking system and the currency. So in February 62, he makes his move to find out what's what and then know that he can make a solid move. Well, in the course of doing that, he finds out that America was not owned by anybody that he thought he could influence. It was owned by the Chinese.
In 62, America was owned by the Chinese?
Yes. It goes back to 1933, and Ion has given us some of this history. Do you remember that Fort Hood massacre a couple of years ago with the crazy psychiatrist?
Yes, absolutely.
Okay, yeah, that was about Federal Reserve notes being shipped over to somewheres in trucks. Well, those were the notes that were set up by and involved with China in 33 to get America out of the Depression. So China really got a lock-in in the 30s, and then just sat there on the sidelines watching America twist.
Now, hold it. That is just a huge chapter that you've opened up, the idea of China, the idea of Fort Hood. And also, I remember Ion saying that there were hundreds of shooters. I mean, there were so many bullets flying all around. And this is something that we got to come back to, Bob, because whatever that Red Cardinal told you, of course, it is very fluid for you. But I know you are bringing up a lot of questions for me and for many of our listeners at this time. So let me do a quick station ID, and we're going to reformulate back, and I don't even know where to go, we have to come back and ask for why, of course, and if this Catholic thing and Vietnam, what he did to Dim, I guess, in Vietnam, so many things. Bob has opened up, a dusty book around the JFK assassination, and he has the eyes to see and the ears to hear, and is here sharing it on this 50th anniversary of the JFK assassination and more on KPFK Project Next. We'll be back with Bob in a moment. Project Next.
Toward the refinement of humankind.
Initiating Activism 4.0. Your portal will be found at projectnext.com. projectnext.us. That's www.projectnext.us. And that us is all of you genies that decide to interrupt your sleep cycles to be up this late. And I'm telling you, the gems that you get, the little nuggets of joy that is late night radio are yours because of your diligence and your dedication to wanting to know something beyond the sunshine, to want to come into the shadow. And those shadows have a lot of jewels in them. And one of those lovely genies here is Bob Dobbs, with us here on Project Next. And so it is absolutely fantastic. Of course, you can visit also kpfk.org. There you will find all of the great programmers, the hundreds of programmers, which is KPFK, and extend out to the thousands of programmers across the United States that bring you unfiltered information, looking for your ascension and to reinstate your power so that we can do something right by America. And it is worth fighting for. On the lines, Bob Dobbs, his website, so many of them, howionic.com, 5body.com, and I'm sure more to come because he has that much to share. And he is on the lines now doing something which is absolutely groundbreaking, which is coming from his high-level detached but yet attached intelligence source, and giving us some of the background on the anniversary of JFK's assassination as to why, how, when, who, where, what, and all the above that has to do with it. Bob, if we can rewind back into the salient point, and I think you were starting to get into it, as to why JFK had to be eliminated. If you can start there.
Right. I want to say that we are doing, over the next 12 months, there's going to be all kinds of specials, I assume, about the JFK assassination, because it's the magic half-century number, 50th anniversary. They used to do the 25th anniversary, the 30th, the 40th. They're going to be doing something this year a lot, and we are the first to do it. And this information on our your show will be the best of all that will be unveiled this year.
Well, I am absolutely honored, Bob, that you are giving us this information, and that it's the time that you feel that people are ready to hear it.
Right, and that's why when you weren't getting to the station, I started to wonder, uh-oh. I knew what I was going to talk about. I said, those damn ESP guys, they heard it. They've offed Evan and maybe Roy. Maybe Roy's going down too.
Yeah, no. We are here because this is what we're meant to do, is to hook up with the Bobs of the world and bring it forth, sir.
Yes, the forces that were overcome to do this show, it's going to take years for people to fathom doing that. What we did to pull it off so that Evan made it through the traffic.
Yes.
There were at least five factions waiting to snuff you, and you avoided every one of them.
Yes. They didn't know I had this this ionic-powered Yaris here.
You had the RNA drops inside you.
Yes.
That's another story. Okay, so I'm explaining why JFK is suicidal. Why is he depressed? Why does he want to die? He's got the familial pressures, got a problem with Jackie, and now he says, well, at least can I do a Lincoln maneuver, Abraham Lincoln, and bring the greenback power back, you know, or to get rid of this lockdown economy involved with international puffery that he felt, and he may not have been right, because the economy might have had to go that way anyways when he got international computer conditions. But anyways, he said, I'm going to fix this thing. And when he found out that there was no America to fix, it was owned by China, this was an incredible shock to him.
Hmm.
He realized he was living in a hologram or some kind of virtual reality, and Americans didn't know it.
Hmm.
To the degree that economic power is important. It's not important. It didn't stop the Beatles. It didn't stop Zappa. It didn't stop rock and roll and Tim Lear and LSD and everything that happened, all the great stuff in the popular culture, right?
Right.
You can't stop that. So, you know, what is power? What did China really control? Well, I don't know. You know, it's pretty vague. But when you move to levels of power that Obama thinks he has, you have to think on that historical level, and you come up with these conundrums.
Hmm.
How do we fix the economy? Well, it's not our economy anymore. It's China's. So when he realized that he couldn't even accomplish a heroic Abraham Lincoln maneuver, and, you know, he was guilty for what he'd done to get to that position, including offing Marilyn Monroe. So here he is trying to redeem himself, and he can't do it. It's impossible. That will depress a person. That will make them think, it's like the Coppola movie, The Godfather.
Yes.
The high winds of tragedy. You know what I mean? It's just too much for humans to take. And so he just went into a suicidal thing, set up the mental attitude, the emotional attitude, the vibration, the frequency to leave. He also had terrible back pain,
yes. All
kinds of problems, just no fun to be alive.
Hmm.
And so because he set that personal momentum, other factions who would prefer him not to be around for their personal ambitions said, okay, let's get this guy. And I don't think they're aware that he is receptive to being killed. They're just going to
do the dirty
have
deed.
Other reasons to do it.
Right.
And this is what Ion tells us. It's the non-physical of all of us. It's communicating among ourselves, you know, all 7 billion of us, and calculating these things. So when I'm watching Eben get stuck in the traffic before she gets here, that could be Eben's own non-physical trying to decide, saying, I know what Bob's going to do tonight. I don't know if I want to be part of this. I think I'll get in a little accident here so I don't make it. But the other part of your non-physical overrode that, and you got here. So you see my point, my metaphor is that the non-physical is communicating on levels or scenarios that you physically aren't manifesting. It's not obvious.
Not obvious, but but somehow, somehow there's
a bit of a manifestation there going on in weird little things that happen. So the point is that the Ion is saying that the guys who wanted to kill Kennedy, their non-physical knew that he had decided to go and was waiting for someone to off him. So he'd have an excuse, so it didn't look like he committed suicide. That's the dialogue among the non-physicals. But Hoover's not thinking that. His chemical body's saying, this guy's going to get rid of me, and I can't be gotten rid of. Now, let me say at this point so I don't forget, a really good novel that captures what I'm talking about is James Ellroy. He's an L.A. writer. His American Tabloid. It's a beautiful trilogy. American Tabloid, The Cold 6000, and Blood's a Rover. Those three books are what every high school student or American freshman in college should read. If they want to understand American history from 58 to 72 when Hoover dies, that trilogy is better than anything. And he novelizes what I'm talking about.
Hmm. Okay,
so real close.
Wow. So tell me,
it makes Hoover the crux of the matter.
So how is it that somebody like James Ellroy attunes to this? Is this non-physical? How did he come to understand this, writers like this, James Ellroy?
Well, maybe he listened to a lot of Mae Brussel. Maybe he listened to Dr. Beter. Maybe he listened to me. Maybe he listened to Lynn LaRouche. There's all kinds of research that he read the Torbett document. And then also in his own field of, you know, sort of studying the underbelly and the police forces of L.A., there's a lot of knowing people in the L.A. police force, so he could meet and talk to people.
Very good.
And he actually, I don't think I'm giving anything away, but the third book is based on a famous detective in L.A.
Okay.
The character Crutch refers to a guy who actually is and became a friend of James Ellroy's after the first two books came out. And Ellroy, I guess it said, decided to take the Crutch character, the real person, his story, and make it part of the resolution in the third novel.
Very good. Very good. Let's rewind. Let's go back into some of the idea of how China, because we know now, and we're saying now, that we are indebted to China. We've sent them all of our industry, et cetera. But you're saying this goes all the way back to the 40s, the 30s and the 40s, was it?
Yes. Well, it goes back 150 years. It goes back to Louisiana Purchase and things like that, which involve the Commonwealth of Virginia, which the royal family of England still owns, okay? And the deals with the French powers at, you know, at the time of 1800, say. And then you have the wealth of China is known by the elites of Europe, and one of the main figures of that is Saint Germain, which many people say is a mythical figure and didn't exist. Well, yeah, you can have that opinion and change to another channel. But I'll tell you, Saint Germain is a real person, and he's still alive. And so Saint Germain was the representative of the financial debts and dealings that the European powers had developed ever since Marco Polo opened the Silk Road in the 1200s A.D. or A.C.E. See, so it goes back to the opening of China. Now, there's a famous historical point in the 1500s, approximately. I have not looked up these dates before this show, so it's just a slight memory blur there. But say around 1500, China had this huge armada, incredible ships. And they started to sort of move out and go across the Pacific Ocean and into the Indian Ocean and all over the place to see if they should do something out there. And they get, like, as far as Africa, and then the big mystery in historians' perspective is, why did China turn back, not try to conquer anything out there on, like, a Roman Empire, horizontal empire, withdrew back into China and became kind of irrelevant to the industrial age that started to grow?
Good question.
The Atlantic Ocean.
Yes.
Cultures. So, and then they just stayed in retreat. Well, they actually knew, because of their own shamans, 1,000 years before now, they saw that America would become the great country it did become, and in the end would be victorious, would be a fantastic culture. So they started to invest in America in the 1800s, maybe even the 1700s. Isn't it interesting that the gold rush, all that stuff in San Francisco in the 1849, 1850 period, there's a lot of Chinese management and slave work going on there.
True, right.
That's because the Chinese were, in a way, in on the elite that was going to determine what to do with this gold if anything was found. They were part of the mafia committee, so to speak. You know, and so that's why their presence is so strong in that gold rush. Not for the, you know, populist reason that they were just a bunch of dummies that were brought over as slaves. No, they were managers of this whole thing.
Well, so, yeah, I mean, all you hear about, you know, Chinamen working on the railroads. I mean, that's all you hear.
They build America. Now, look at this. You could say that they build America like the blacks did. And you look back, well, they weren't building it for you or me. They were building it for China.
But what was their investment?
That they knew historically, because they're psychics or whatever you want to call them. There's paintings in China from 1,000 years ago of people with like a Dick Tracy wristwatch, or you call an iPhone, people talking on little devices in their hands. 1,000 years ago. So they saw what the 21st and 22nd century was going to be, which would be the real turning point of human history, the 21st century. This is the century where everything gets something totally different. And now for something completely different. All right?
Okay.
And so they wanted to have a stake in there, the elders, the elite of China. So they, and the oligarchs always plan pretty far ahead. And the Chinese are pretty good at this. So they knew that you couldn't stop the fact that America was going to become the powerhouse it did. And also so much technology and everything comes out of America. They probably figured out that little thing in the guy's hand 1,000 years ago. They said, Jesus, that's Steve Jobs' product. We've got to wait for Steve to show up. We'll stick with Steve. So, okay, so they had this, you know, amazing vast vision. So they sat out all the turmoil in Europe. You know, the religious wars, the industrial wars, the civil wars, the First World War and Second World War, they basically sit it out.
Wow.
Why get involved? And they're pretty locked in as a potential owner of the prize, that being America. So what happened at the time of Theodore Roosevelt, which is, you know, 1900, he becomes president around then?
Yes.
Is that was the first crisis financially. And so what happens is all that wilderness that the Sierra Club preserves, all that wilderness in America, that was handed over to China. So when you're going through parks in the United States, you're going through property owned by China, which was the first collapse with the Roosevelt administration. Financially, they didn't have anything. It turns out that America was pretty weak in the big level. It's only a new country, too. It was pretty way weaker than Americans realize. So here they are vulnerable in 1900, so they have to turn over a lot of their land as collateral. Okay? Then the next crisis happens in the 30s with the global economic collapse due to radio and electric environments, which were basically free information,
right,
where everybody could get stuff for free and not have to buy it. And if I gave out information, I could keep it and you could have it. It's not like I give you an apple and you eat it and then I don't have an apple.
Right.
The whole electronic software communism that came in with the radio era screwed up the meaning of money. And that's why money became public property in the 30s, known as welfare states or socialist states or the New Deal or fascist states or communist states. That's money as public property. It's not owned by the oligarchs anymore. Okay, so in this crisis of confusion for the American bankers, China saves them. So China gets its further hooks on America through the Federal Reserve notes and the gold deal that was set up by Roosevelt. Now note that the son, or whatever he was, relative of Teddy, he's now going to do the next phase. He's going to scarf up all the gold and put it away someplace in Fort Knox. And that's a whole story where that gold went to. That's not in Fort Knox anymore.
Okay, we'll have to talk about that, but go ahead, yes.
Yeah. So China, now you can go to informationfarm.blogspot.com, Ed's site, and look under ION, and all the topics we broadcast the last 3 years are presented in alphabetical order in that page called ION. Now you scan down and look up Nasara, N-E-S-A-R-A. You know about that.
Yeah.
Look up Nasara. Now you listen to that topic and ION talking about it. And who is the key figure in the Nasara information? I'll tell you, it's Hillary Clinton. And why is it Hillary Clinton? Because her father was the one fully aware of the Chinese dominance in the 60s and 70s in the hidden ground of America. And then a side thing, McLuhan said in the 60s that China was the hidden ground. Very interesting that he would say that. What did he know? Anyway, I didn't have a chance to check him out on that. But he said China was the hidden ground. And he had sociological reasons for saying that. So here is Hillary Clinton's father coming out of Chicago, knows the obligations of the American economic system to China, and they need money again. Because there was a gold crisis in 1968. There was a currency crisis. Talk to a guy like Sherman Skolnick, he'll tell you about this.
Mm-hmm.
There was a crisis in 68 in the world economy, and America was vulnerable again.
Mm-hmm.
So Nixon had to go to China with his hat, you know, his hat in his hand, begging. Okay, what can you help? What can you do for us? We'll give you this. I'll give you my Frank Sinatra record collection. You know, or the Rat Pat record, all this great culture I'll give you. So that's why Nixon, he went there ostensibly to open China to us. No, he went there with hat in his hand and in trouble.
Mm-hmm.
And the person who was the in-between fixer of this relationship was Hillary Clinton's father.
Mm-hmm.
Which means that Hillary Clinton is going to be pretty close to being a president someday because she's already part of the hidden circle.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so here's what the deal was. The deal was that China says we want a way of distributing the products that our people are going to start making as we become, quote, capitalists or industrious people making products. So we want to have some distribution mechanism that we control. So guess what they got? They got Walmart. They set up little old Sam Walton down there in Georgia, down in Arkansas, right where Hillary was in the law firm.
Okay.
Now, it's interesting if you read Little Roosh's literature, Executive Intelligence Review, and other pretty good journalists, in the sense that they keep their records. They read books.
Yes.
They're one of the few people in America that reads.
Yes.
They read newspapers all over the world. They're a cult of literacy.
Yes.
And they read, and they put it all together on their computers, and they come out with interesting connections like Mae Brussel used to do, because
yes.
Mae read a lot
mm-hmm.
every day. And you can look up the history of Walmart, you know, when LaRouche and him do it, and they know that he was set up by something, but they'll call it British intelligence or the City of London. They don't know, or they'll not admit, and I doubt if they know, they don't know that behind the City of London is China on a broad level, see? But they know that there's some setting up for Mr. Walton. Okay, so Walmart then becomes this huge powerhouse in the era that China becomes a huge powerhouse, let's say since 1990, right?
Right.
And it's because the digital environment, the electronic digital electronic transparency is removing all the layers of the onion so that the guys who actually do own the last vestiges of gold, credit, and currency are standing there with their clothes off and totally visible.
Hmm.
So China never rose and just sped ahead because it was big population or whatever. It got revealed
that it was
guys with any power.
That it was already there.
Already there.
And so we basically are still trying to pay them back.
Yes, right. And they are being real careful because they can't collapse America because then they lose their investment.
Right.
So they're caught in a powerless position the way everything is so interdependent. They can't really push the whole thing and make the Bush family or the Clinton family or whatever give in to this situation because Bush and the Clintons can just walk around on the TV landscape pretending there's an America and strut a boat because they know China doesn't want to rock the boat where everything falls apart. So this is where power becomes nothing. It's a technological interdependency that's very sophisticated, and it's fun to look and understand, and the best book that shows this is Finnegan's Wake. It's the best psychological document, sociological, chemistry, genetic stuff, physics. It's got it all in there. And Joyce, he half-channeled it, so to speak, and he let language do the talking.
So hold it. If America was to collapse, what happens to China?
They lose their investment. So America's not going to collapse.
But if it were to collapse, what happens to China? It loses an investment, but what does that mean to China's economy? How much of an investment does it lose? What kind of gazillion dollars does China have over us?
It loses a lot. It goes down with it.
Okay, it goes
down.
Now, they are
running around the rest of the world and involved in every other economy in the third world, or what was called the third world.
Right.
And they're trying to prop up some backup, so to speak. But none of those populations are as huge as the American economy.
Aren't they in Africa?
They're all over the place. They're in Mexico, everywhere. Because they're the only ones. They're doing what the Rockefellers are doing in the 60s and 70s. Through AID, Rockefeller would send out the welfare money all over the world. And then he got caught in the late 70s with the oil crisis and the speeding up of the digital economy that they couldn't bring the loans, debts back in. And everything collapsed in the late 70s for the Rockefellers. So China is like the new Rockefellers handing out the medium of money and industrial structure, but most of it's really digital. They're the only ones doing it around the world.
So it is. So somebody would always, I always wondered, et cetera, that if it is, I mean, they have these QE3, QE2s, and here it is, we're printing the money, we're loaning it to our own banks are going to buy the treasuries and trying to do this internal mechanism. But what actually is the collateral for the borrowing? What is the actual?
There isn't any.
There isn't any.
There is not that kind of who has the most gold or the most this or that, and then he runs the world. The economy is not based on money and credit. This is where the Ron Pauls and the right wings who want to get back to the gold standard of the Constitution are ridiculous. Technologically, you can't go back to that. It's not that kind of world anymore, and it's even way more complex than I want to get into here, and I've done many shows the last 12 years with you on this stuff.
Yes.
So back to, I've explained the technological structure, why there is no money, and that's
right.
Not the measurement.
Right.
What's interesting is that the digital environment has kind of collapsed over the last 3 years. People can't calibrate what anything is. since everybody can get hacked and cloud computing's coming in, and that you have bloggers, you know, very sophisticated computer bloggers saying, this is it. There can be no privacy even on the corporate level once everything's up there in the cloud or in there, wherever the cloud is. So there's a huge vulnerability digitally to the whole Android meme itself. And so banks aren't – people who have money or some kind of property and they want to be protected, they can't rely on the banks. They don't have anybody to be a bank for them anymore because the bank structure doesn't work. And someone can make a lot of money or power, whatever they think they could get. They could be another failed Bill Gates. He eventually flipped into his opposite. But they can be the new temporary Bill Gates and come up a way that offers security for people's values and valuables, a new kind of banking thing. And Ian's talked about it with some of my clients, and I know how it could be done. But I'm just throwing that idea out there. We need a new way to develop a trust mechanism where you don't have to carry all your belongings around with you.
Yeah, it's,
so that you have, you leave it somewhere.
It's like we almost have to go back into the physical.
But there isn't any. So what would be the physical if you say that?
Well, it would just be that it isn't. It doesn't go break down into ones and zeros. Somehow we have to get back into the material, the dollar. There actually has to be something.
No, that's the mistake. You can't go back. And that's why we're on the cusp of an incredible spiritual, or whatever you want to say, amazing revolution. What you go into is spiritual gifts, or the understanding of anomalies, or the mystery landscape. You go into an amazing, magical situation that Ion is the representative of. Ion's a technology.
Yes.
And I suggest you listen to the show I broadcast last Thursday, The Last Cash Flow, because now I'm doing my own show for the first time in my information career, and it's called Payday. I'm in charge. But anyways, the virtual nature of Ion was laid out last on the November 15th Cash Flow Archive, if you want to hear an amazing show.
Okay.
Ion is not ectoplasm, warm, fuzzy ectoplasm, or some spiritual entity, or David Wilcox, Divine Cosmos. Ion is physicalness and digital code, too.
Wow.
So when you say go back to the physical, you don't go back to the physical. That's an anthropomorphic projection of the old 3D body.
Right, true.
But I'm not saying go to this metaphysical 4D or 5D. We're already in a dimension with our internet. We're already off the planet and off the solar system and into a resonant membrane that nobody can visualize.
But that's our vulnerability, though, correct? Because it is that interconnectedness of this consciousness, then there aren't any borders, there aren't any boundaries, and you are able, in a sense, to intuit the ideas, the creative currency, intellectual capacity of others just by somehow this idea popping in your head that maybe it had been in somebody else's head just a month earlier or something.
Right, and the most vulnerable culture in the world today that is not capable from its historical cultural mix and media mix, guess what that culture is, the one that's most incapable of handling what you just described?
Who?
The United States, the North American literate, industrial, kinetic culture, a strong sense of an individual billiard ball kind of sensibility, all right, tough, rugged individual. Just the ownership of property, the whole thing that the printing press built up, because America is the only country built on the printing press and has that bias, that sensibility is a mystery to every other culture in the world and is totally incapable of handling the internet. Now, the paradox is that that individual genius is what makes this technology that, like a Trojan horse, undermines the American character or the American tradition. And that's why America's been a basket case as the policeman of the world for 40 years.
On the lines, Bob Dobbs. His websites, you can go to www.informationfarm.blogspot.com. That is one of his great members that comes out and interviews Bob and Ion. Information.blogspot.com. Also, fivebodied.com and howionic.com. And that is just how broad and deep it is with Bob and all the genies that he brings together. And so this is the end of the first hour. We'll be back in a moment. Bob Dobbs on the line. Stay tuned for the second hour of Project Next on KPFK 90.7 FM Los Angeles, streaming worldwide at kpfk.org. Project Next.
Purifying the humankind.
And part of that purification has to do with us really blowing out the cobwebs of what we think we know, what we think we are grasped with. And, oh, my God, there is it is so fantastic to have on Bob Dobbs, somebody who is invested in humans, in giving them the opportunity to know, putting up multiple websites, doing multiple shows, always with such capacity and such compassion to have people understand that, no, it's not gibberish. It isn't art, words of art. They're artful words that have very significant and profound meanings. And tonight, doing something brilliantly new, which is we started with unwinding the JFK assassination, and he started doing that in the midst of how ION has postured and talked about the idea of murder, which is something that I think really is challenge people to understand that people that die wanted to. And then there are facilitators, and those facilitators have their own ways and demons and or angels or whatever it is that they frequencies, okay, to understand. And maybe with those frequencies, with whatever religious dogma comes up and twists those frequencies in their minds to hellish realms or things such as this. But getting back, I know we have far gone astray into all these different areas, and I really appreciate your wonderment, Bob. Tell us a little bit about what happened to the gold after FDR confiscated it, supposedly in Fort Knox. Did that just end up going to China, too?
Yes, and I just want to say it's informationfarm.blogspot.com, just so it's on the record what it is.
Oh, I thought I said Blogspot.
It's informationfarm.blogspot.com.
Yes.
I think you just said information.blogspot.
Oh, I'm sorry.
You might have said it right before. But anyway.
Okay.
So, before, I want to add this. So, what ION said, the culture that's more, the most, has the sensibility most able to adapt and enjoy the 21st century and what's coming, guess what that culture is?
Oh, no. Who?
China. So isn't it interesting? You see, these are Chinese chemical bodies. We're talking about Chinese people, but they have chip bodies and TV bodies themselves. They got more than the chemical body. So you have the world, you know, brought together, unified under what I call the Android meme, the resonant node through the chip landscape over the last 30 years. And then as it shrinks, it makes the chemical bodies feel super powerful because the media is shrinking all around it. It's bigger than anything. People want to know, they talk about the indigo children. Why do these kids seem so, you know, super aware and all that? It's because they're growing up in an environment where there's no media kicking them in the head.
Hmm.
There's no railroads. There's no huge cities with pollution like the 19th century. There's no movies and big radio drum, tribal drums of radio or TV blasting. They got it all in a little invisible thing on their iPhone.
And they get to pick and choose. It's not driven down their throat, but they are gestured to go in a particular direction, and it seems that some of this old media certainly does kind of still influence some of their choices, because even with that autonomy, there seems to be still such uniformity to our youth.
Okay, now that's the uniformity of the industrial homogenization of the chemical body.
Yes.
And then the industrial analog media, which I call the TV body.
Yes.
But they know that the chip body is what they live in and what they're good at. But every generation, and novelists have pointed this out through the years, every generation is always fascinated with the generation just before them. Babies are fascinated with their parents. Well, what was going on with them? Yeah. So they're fascinated by the analog media phase.
Right. Absolutely.
That's their parents, media parents, is the whole, all the media before the satellite.
But Bob, what always confounded me in trying to get straight with your cosmology of all of this is that the chip is composed of that old media. So they are seeing digitized analog videos, YouTube. You know, they are seeing MP3s from the tape source of analog. Everything that used to be of this old architecture is in the chip, and doesn't it still bring the very same confining and conformist energies, even though it's being delivered in something that's so accessible?
Just like speech was a conforming medium. You get a tribe speaking the same language. That's totalitarian.
Right.
Each individual citizen or entity in the tribe, the primitive tribe, is not allowed to blather their own syllables. See? So it begins. Media forms a meme, and the first one was speech. Now here's a law that McLuhan came up with. Every culture on the broad level is fascinated by the previous phase. So what were the alphabetic Greeks, time of Plato and Aristotle and Socrates, you know, 400 BC. What were they? What became the content of their culture? It was Homer and that whole pre-alphabetic stuff.
Right.
Then you come 400 years later, you come to Rome. What are they obsessed with in the content of their writings and novels and culture? They're obsessed with Greece and the great Greek philosophers and philosophical debates. So then you get the Dark Ages, so that wipes out the books for a little bit. But then you get Charlemagne and the Holy Roman Empire retrieved, 800 to 1000 A.D., or A.C.E.
Mm-hmm.
The point is what is Charlemagne trying to rebuild? Rome! We
right.
walk backwards into the future. We're always got our cultural gaze, our meme gaze, on the last amazing environment, a different kind of environment, because what's happening in Europe in the around 1,000 years ago is way different from Rome, 1,000 years before that. But in the imagination of the collective, they are thinking in rearview mirror terms, and they see Rome. Okay, so Charlemagne tries to do that. He fails, and then you have that weird scene, and then the Black Plague, and then comes the printing press, and then the Atlantic phase of civilization and culture, the industrial phase. What are they? What is Shakespeare and them fascinated by? The Middle Ages.
Yes.
They're writing plays and culture around stuff that happened before the printing press.
Right.
So then you get into the 19th century with the Electric Age and the beginning of telegraph and the super industrial steamships and all that stuff, the late 19th century. What is the culture obsessed with? They're obsessed with the Renaissance and the Shakespeares and all the great writers and painters of the Renaissance period. You see how they're always looking one phase back?
Yes.
Okay. So then you get into the 20s and 30s and 40s. What is culture obsessed with? They have to be obsessed with the previous phase. The previous phase was mechanization and industrialization, while the present is electric software, radio, telephones, and movies. You could even say TV. So what is going to become the content, the fascination of the culture and programs in the radio world? It's going to be the previous mechanical stuff, and that's all the mechanization of the arts, from the constructivists in Russia to Leger and Cubist. They take the industrial world and the organization of industrial mechanical robot cyborgness,
yes,
like the Dadaists did, and they make that into an art form,
right.
A probe.
Right.
So here we are today. What would we, if we're in a post-electronic phase, because the electronic phase of the 30s and 40s and 50s is obsessed with mechanization. That's why the Bauhaus failed, but some of those Bauhaus guys came over and they made these huge skyscrapers, right?
Mm.
In New York and Chicago and that. Why did people go for that boring, flat, modernist kind of design and architecture, which, you know, later generations thought was so impersonal? It's because they were fascinated by the previous era, the slabs of industry from the 19th century. So here we are in a new place with this weird digital cloud computing. What are we going to be obsessed with?
Right,
The electrical phase or analog media phase?
Yes, 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 yes.
So we're always, this is a very mechanical pattern, but on a broad level, it's undeniable.
You know, we have a call. One second, Bob.
Okay.
Hi, caller one. Welcome.
Hello.
Hi.
It's me, right?
Welcome. How you doing?
I'm doing awesome. This is Scott Sycamore.
Hi.
I know Bob. Bob knows me.
Yes.
Awesome show, I think.
Yes.
Yeah, so there's so much media talk. It's really incredible. I mean, I don't know what this whole Bob Dobbs thing is. I just don't get it anymore.
You see how we try to have a discussion, they all start talking about me. Let's not talk about me.
Okay, well, yeah, the electric media, it's really done a number on people.
Now, listen to that statement, Evan.
Yes.
He's standing from the digital phase where all the electric media has shrunk. And he's looking back at what the electric harp did to people, and he can say it did a number. Because we're not conditioned by the electric media anymore.
Mm.
And that's why Jordan's statement, or Scott's statement, is... It's hilarious. Well, look what electric media. Well, sure, did a number on you guys.
but
is that what Aldous Huxley was saying about Orwell when he wrote Brave New World? Said that Orwell vision that did a number on you guys. I'm going to make another book about sex and soma. That's what the Brave New World is going to be about. It's just interesting the way he's saying it. You get what I'm trying to say? That he's standing on a top of a mountain, a digital mountain, because Scott has his own show. He's on the same network as I am, Achieve Radio. And he can create his own little empire of talk and old media. And what is he saying? We're offering critique about what electricity did on you guys. But no, electricity is not really affecting people anymore. Mm. It's this digital cloud computing and the ionic environment.
Okay.
That is a hidden ground.
Empire of lies, Bob.
What?
It's an empire of lies, Bob.
No. See, there's no lying going on.
Lying
died in the First World War, about 1914, or if you want to make it a little later, 1934, newspeak. But once you have a TV reality where there's so much endless content required, nobody worries about the truth anymore. You just start making it up and making stories, and millions of people get jobs making stories.
It's fiction.
And then the postmodernists like Heidegger come along and say, you know, there's no truth anymore. And so not lying is not the critical level. That's verbal talk. That's old media. That's analog.
But you know what? Let's, Scott, ask your question, because I really want to get back into this JFK kind of thing, and we're so glad that you're up late, sir.
Well, yeah. Well, you're going into JFK. I'll ask a question. So, Bob, were you involved in the assassination of JFK? And if so, how does that relate to the other stuff you're talking about?
Okay.
Well, if you read my diaries, I certainly knew Hoover since the 50s. And if you go look up my diary entry for about 1954 and see what I say to Hoover, I give away and tell you what the peccadillo of Hoover was in his resentment of the Kennedys. Hoover had a thing about the Catholics. He was not going to allow the Catholics to take over America for whatever perverse Protestant reason he had, or Freemasonic reason. And that is the personal thing that he had against the Kennedys, besides all the other technical bureaucratic problems, is that he thought there was a Catholic conspiracy against America. Okay, so you can read that in my diaries, and you can find out who I talked to. I'm driving down the... anyways, there's really interesting diary entries in 64 and 65, after the Kennedy assassination. Basically, there's one where I'm whipping down Park Avenue, Fifth Avenue, with David Ferry, and we're listening to a great song, Crying. Anyways, we'll get lost with that. So back to here, you asking about my role. My role was that since I was not a CEO level, I was just a working guy, on the level of a James Bond, you could say. Do you know that the James Bond movies are totally about the solar government?
Yes, absolutely. I for myself would say that, yes.
It's always about some Rumpelstiltskin that's going to hijack the whole planet.
Yes.
And bypass the superpower detente.
Right, the syndicate.
Yeah. So anyway, so that's what the Secret Council 10 was. But we actually were on the watch out for Nuvo Rumpelstiltskins, Nuvo hijackers.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so what I did in the Kennedy assassination after was encourage the dissemination of different kinds of books and the confusion. We encouraged, you know, the pro-Lone Nut guys, the anti-Lone Nuts. We created a whole range of publishing and making the JFK conspiracy an industry. And so I met all those people, and that's how I became a friend of Mae Brussel. So my role was part of the disinformation. I wasn't at Dealey Plaza.
Okay. Okay. Could we, you talk?
You know why we did it, Scott? We did it so there would be no civil war. That was our rationale. We thought we were doing the right thing.
Okay. I'm sorry. He's left the building. He's left the building. But where would the Civil War erupt if JFK continued?
Oh, you mean if he stayed alive?
Yes.
No, there wouldn't have been a Civil War. He would have implemented, you know, crudely, maybe the civil rights and the things that did happen anyways under LBJ, but all those legislative maneuvers would be obsolesced by the effects of computers, the effects of the digital media in general that has happened to America, the wiping away of America on so many levels, that nobody, no politician, no Congress can stop that. And the people know this. They know these jokers have no influence on what's affecting everybody's working life,
so
economic life.
So did RFK, Robert F. Kennedy, also have a suicide mission?
Yes. He was underneath his father's specter. Yeah, Joseph Kennedy is a big factor in this.
Yeah.
And some of the other, his close relatives, decided to facilitate that.
What do you mean, some of his closer relatives?
is Ethel still alive?
No, I don't think she is. I can look that up real quick, but go ahead.
Google. Let me just check the Google here. I'll check. I hope I can rely on the Wikipedia.
Hold it. I'm looking right now, too.
Yeah, you're pretty fast.
Yeah.
Kennedy.
Right, Ethel. Okay. Ethel Skakel.
Yes. She's still alive. Okay. And Ethel's a very nice person. Very nice person. Nothing to do with the Kennedy assassination. She's still alive, yo. Okay, so let's move on to another topic.
Okay, can't talk about that. Okay.
Yeah.
All right, talk about Fort Hood. How does that wrap in?
Okay, so you have Hillary running around as Secretary of State. She did not want to be president. That's the worst position to be. Look at the Republicans. They didn't want to win this thing, so they put a joker in. And he might have thought it was worth doing, but he eventually started looking real confident a couple of weeks before the election. And everybody thought that he was being confident because he was going to win, and he thought he was winning. No, he was confident that he was going to lose, and he was happy. He didn't want to be president. He wanted to be Secretary of State or something. That's where he can get the business deals going. So Hillary Clinton is running around in this period of tension between China and the United States over what these stupid, spastic, literate Americans are going to do in the cloud computing world, because they can't get their... They can't get adjusted, and China knows they've got the sensibility. So here's Hillary, whose father was involved in setting up Nixon and Walmart and everything that has held the secret deals together, in a crisis. And where was she the week of Fort Hood? She's over getting beat up in North Korea. You look it up. She's over there running around arguing with North Korea, which is the front for China. And so... Hillary is in the middle of this crisis, and in that crisis where basically the Clinton guys are reneging on the obligations of paying back what the Chinese are owed and whatever economic thing is necessary at this point. And this leads into 9-1-1, too. This is things were due in 2000. Well, that's the Nasara point. These people who go on about the Nasara history are right about what happened in 2000 up to a point. They don't know the bigger picture. But they know something was due, and Clinton reneged on it.
Yes.
President Clinton.
Yes, yes.
So here's this battle between – here's China hacking everybody, hacking the Treasury, hacking the Fed. You might remember these stories in 2009 and 10. And in the middle of it, China says, well, the hell with it. We're going to just go over there and get those bills and papers that show that we do this, and we're just going to grab them. So they walked into Fort Hood and shot up some people and took the documents that were over here as opposed to the documents that China had. They needed both. And that was in the battle over, you got to understand, even though the Chinese have this, you know, savoir faire about what's going on, they're still subject to the confusion of the digital environment anyways.
Right.
Everybody
right.
is. No culture can handle the wonderful autonomy and almost simulated godhood that the digital media creates for young
people. So, Bob, how is it for the military that were present at the shooting, how is it that they do not and they aren't able to recreate or say what happened at that event, that it wasn't this lone shooter? How is it that this story gets redrafted, kind of like what you had to do for JFK?
That's right.
How does it that it becomes redrafted with so many eyes on site with Fort Hood?
Because the level I'm talking about will never be admitted to.
Okay.
When I was talking about it on Chief Radio and giving out this information, we got a call from some major senators who told us, and we got to stop talking about that. They tried to intimidate us. And they said, we'd actually do something against you guys, but you guys are so nutty and funny that nobody's going to take you seriously.
Mm-hmm.
But we personally object to you discussing the hidden history of China.
Mm-hmm.
That was said to us.
Okay.
Okay, so, you know, what is any important scandal, if it remains unresolved, but yet the people know something weird was going on, none of it makes sense? We're witnessing it right now with Mr. Petraeus resigning.
Petraeus,
right?
Yeah. What do you say about that? Petraeus.
Well, I say the battle between media dynamics is always what the battle over the White House is. And I've done this before in your show. I went back through the last 50 years and explained, for example, Watergate was a battle between the newspaper and television for the advertising dollar.
Okay.
The newspaper was so on the sidelines, they decided to create a problem around Watergate, and that's the Washington Post and the New York Times, against the TV reality, CBS and that Nixon could control. All right?
Okay.
What is the media dynamic here? You've got Web 2.0 coming to its end now. It's an established fact that everybody enjoys, Facebook, my page, YouTube, everything that everybody can do, have millions of websites and go on Reddit and all these different places and have fun in an autonomous way. Like, why even bother going to movies? I'll make my own movies. You know, why do this? Why make record? I'll do it. And so all the major analog entertainment industries are always in crisis the last 10 years. So that's Web 2.0. And as we moved into Web 3.0, which is something different, and I would say cloud computing, whatever you imagine cloud computing is, think of that as Web 3.0.
Right.
That is creating a whole new war on many levels for major power companies that were in dominance in the Web 1.0 and Web 2.0 phase.
Mm-hmm.
So what is the imagery of battle in media terms we just witnessed? You had Obama is the nostalgic figure. He's the guy that represents that yearning for human scale that the Occupy Wall Streeters represented a year ago.
Mm-hmm.
Occupy Wall Street was nostalgia for the connecting and networking that Web 2.0 created,
mm-hmm.
versus the scary thing where everybody goes into their Matrix tube even more extremely, like in Neo and Morpheus in the Matrix movies, where he thinks he's living in New York City. This is Web 3.0 coming in. So there was a nostalgia for Web 2.0 networking and connecting. And so the Web 2.0 guy, that image remained strong. That's Obama. What is Romney? Romney's not an image of the past, of the right wing or the neoconservative or old-fashioned values. He represents Web 3.0, the frantic, desperate move to make interconnectivity and network to get yourself into a position of being a god, a techno-god.
Mm.
And that's why his graspingness, you know, he was the guy sweating. He really wanted the job. He didn't want the job of the presidency. He wanted to have networking pay off that he had developed when he was governor.
Yes.
And so here the election, on one level, never happened because nothing changed. And nobody, and the factor that influenced the vote, they say, young people, blacks, Hispanics, weren't even in the game when all the billions were being thrown around for the campaigning.
Mm-hmm.
And they just rose up and toppled the whole analog media political structure.
Right.
So they kept their guy in because they're nostalgic for Web 2.0.
Right.
And Romney, the other aspect of the election never happened. It has not ended.
Mm.
And immediately, the networking specter of people desperately trying to connect to create a cabal that has some influence is represented by Paula Broadwell and Jill Kelly.
Hmm.
They're continuing the election as Romneyites, frantically trying to network with obsolete structures like the Pentagon. And so Petraeus gets caught in the crossfire. Now, there's other things. You know, that's on the media level of the chip body and TV body. Then there's the chemical body level, where somebody's being killed for this reason or that reason over bank accounts. And that's the level that they're not going to talk about.
Okay.
So
can
it's,
you?
It's like China is saying, we don't want Obama for another term. And if he's going to be in here again, then we're going to put our CIA director in.
Ah, very interesting. You know, yeah, I always thought, it's like, hold it, this guy is being kicked out for consensual sex, but yet in the military, there are thousands of rapes that go unpunished, but yet this very public flogging of adultery, and the CIA actually says adultery is fine by us. We do it all the time.
Yeah, everybody does. There are no families anymore.
Yes.
Well, what family values are being preserved?
Right.
For a majority of Americans, there's not that value. So he obviously is faking it on that level for the TV language, but he's under other kinds of pressures and maybe working for the Chinese and resigning so that his buddy gets in and he's still on the same side.
So what do you think of Clinton? Hillary Clinton has walked away from the Secretary of State. What do you read into that maneuver?
I see Hillary, the Chinese don't need whatever her family had done for them. She's obsolete.
Oh, wow. But you're saying she's going to be the next president, though. She's going to run.
No, I said that when in the early 70s she was... She was in the groove to in the circuitry and the connections to become part of that level of American society at some level, senator, president, and she got there. And she was first lady for 8 years.
Right.
She already did it.
Right.
And but it's a different world. The White House isn't important anymore.
On a real huge fragment here away from that, I'm wondering about the resiliency of the Windsor, House of Windsor. And
very strong, very strong.
Yeah, somebody had told me that a model was having a little shindig with Prince Andrew. And Prince Andrew had said to this model that they had a divine right to rule because their blood was mixed with something other, that he actually got into what David Icke had speculated about, that there is some kind reptilian.
Right. And what the reptilian is that actually Icke's got it confused. It refers to the Lemurians. The Lemurians are an actual species here on the planet. And they were down in the Polynesia area 2,000 years ago, and the Roman ships chased them off Easter Island in that area, so they were forced to go into Asia and start to mingle with our kind of species, civilizations. And they have moved into positions of influence a lot all over the last history, but they're not vicious enemies of us. They just have talents that you could say they're psychic. And
right.
Say a talent like that. And
right.
So they know what's going on that their fellow humans don't know, and so they can get an advantage. And there have been Lemurians in high places, but I want to not focus. So they're not reptilians from another planet. They're an actual species. You could say they're the hollow earth species.
Right.
Not that's an exaggeration. But the point is they're another species. They're different.
When we get back from this break, I'd love to talk with you about the enduring nature of Windsor.
Yes, that's what I'm going to tell you.
Yeah.
Give you exclusive.
Absolutely. All right. Bob Dobbs on the line. And, well, you guys can be too. 818-985-5735. 818-985-KPFK. Let's hurry and get back from this break because so many things to talk with Bob about, and so many lovely websites, howionic.com, informationfarm.blogspot.com, and fivebody.com. There is that much and more, and also Achieve Radio. Forget about it. He's everywhere. He's probably going to be in the club.
RNADrops.com.
And RNADrops.com and RayRNADrops.com. All of us, that RNA is the thing. And so, all right, darlings, we'll be back in just a moment. Project Next.
Toward the refinement of humankind.
Initiating Activism 4.0. Your portal will be found at projectnext.us. That's www.projectnext.us. And that us, you know what it is. That is all of us out there seeking and searching and all of this goodness. Also go to kpfk.org. Learn more about all of the amazing sister stations and the goodness, which is KPFK. Hundreds of programmers, lots of different perspectives. And if you're up late, well, obviously, you're looking for something, can see around curves and can see around corners. And so we are happy to abide you with that kind of goodness. Bob, before we go into the House of Windsor, we have a call. Hi, caller one. Welcome to KPFK.
Yeah, it's me again.
Oh, it's Scott. Okay. Okay.
I'm the guy listening.
Yeah, hi.
I'm the number one caller because, I saw Bob's posting on Facebook earlier and he said he'd be on the show and I knew I'd be up this late because I always am. I didn't hang up or anything last time. It just, the connection got severed.
Severed.
I thought it might be because of the controversial, questioning. But.
Oh, no, not at all, darling. We're in the controversy. Yeah. But what's your question real quick?
Bob can keep going. I can ask, I can ask based on whatever Bob's doing. But, yeah, I mean, there is nothing. There really is nothing. I mean, I want Bob to be on my show, so I want to interview him. So I want to ask him about that, but we've already done that. I want to hear more.
Want to lurk here. We're going to talk, and you might get a question of what we're going to talk about next, right?
Well, I'll pipe in,
Okay, yeah. So let me tell you. First, just to make the point here is that the American people decide to stay with the past in the presidential election for the Android memes version of headquarters called the White House. So they went for an old comforting image, which is the Barack image of Web 2.0. Romney is what every American is right now, networking, seeking a way to figure out how to survive in a disappeared economy and all kinds of levels of disappearance. That tenacious American individuality trying to form group consciousness or group awareness and group networking, represented by Paula Broadwell, Jill Kelly, they're keeping that archetype going after Romney had to step aside for a few minutes. But he'll be back representing the present that Americans are afraid of. They're afraid of the effect of the situation with cloud computing. Now, let's go on to the British historical monarchy. What I'm going to tell you is the biggest secret of the 20th century. The biggest secret of the 20th century is, and I'm telling this stuff, we only got 6 weeks, and we're all going to get wiped out, apparently, on December 21st, so why not be the final? Why not get the last word in?
Yes.
Right when the stakes are all gone. And it's also, I now have my own radio show, and you can go to AchieveRadio.com on Tuesday night, 7 p.m. Pacific Standard Time, and hear the most amazing last radio show before December 21st, Frank Zappa's birthday, 2012, which we know will be a tremendous day. What is it? The Andromeda Strain? What, we got metaphors? It's Jurassic Park. Something devastating is going to happen on that day, right?
You know it. Absolutely. All those that live underground will emerge.
Yes, it'll be the Lemurian World Series.
Yeah.
Okay, so the biggest secret of the 20th century is the role of the Queen Mother in World War II and how she whooped Europe and put it all together because of what she did. And that movie, what's it called? The King's Speech.
Yes.
All right, isn't that about her?
No, I thought it was about...
her husband.
About a king.
Right.
Right, but didn't she play a pretty interesting role in that? In other words, the movie makers knew or intuited the role of the Queen's mother, but they aren't allowed to talk about this. So they made a story about her husband just to sort of make people aware of her.
Okay.
I haven't seen the movie yet. I'm just going on.
I don't remember her. I don't remember her at all playing a big role. It was just about him coming and being able to stand up to the looming threat of Hitler and that he was backstabbing and going against what, he had said, even though there were people in London that were supporting him. But obviously, and his brother abdicated the throne, so he had to stand up. And so it was more about him. But what was looming in the background there, Bob?
It was her. I understand that she is shown in the movie to be the backbone of the structure of him. He's a weak weak guy, and
okay.
he needs her.
Yes, that's okay. So, Helen Bellamy okay. Calder plays her. Yeah, okay.
So the point is that the Queen Mother is so powerful, became so powerful that you can't topple that house. Remember the movie 2012 a couple of years ago?
Yes.
Remember everybody gets on the boat and they try to get off the planet or whatever?
Right.
Who walks on that boat? The Queen Elizabeth with a little dog, if you remember. She paid $1 billion to get on the boat. Remember that?
I missed that little thing, but okay.
Yeah. Yeah. They showed the Queen Elizabeth, whatever's going to happen, whatever it costs, she'll have the money to handle it.
Okay.
Now, they had a bit of a crisis in 20 years ago, and that's the old Secret Council 10 battles. But she's doing pretty good,
yes.
and they thanks to her mother,
so
Queen Mother.
So what is it about the Queen Mom that makes her so solid? What does she have? Lemurian blood? A psychic? Is she able to do something phenomenal?
Yes, she was
what is
able
it?
To do something. She was able to go to parallel worlds.
What do you mean?
Well, in World War II, the British had no money, no nothing. They were in trouble against the fascists, and no resources. And then the Queen Mother tapped into her ability to go to another world, and she brought a lot of wealth over, a lot of gold. And all of a sudden, Balmoral Palace had all the power. And then people could start being paid to do things for Britain. Up to that point, why work for Britain? They got no money. I'll work for Hitler. Work for Mussolini. Work for the people who've got some wealth. But she retrieved huge wealth and saved your ass, Eben. Save the West.
Okay, so if I'm hearing this correctly, perfectly right, she was, for one, she knew about the existence of parallel worlds.
Yes.
And she knew that in this parallel world, it was just like her world, but slightly different. And did she have to channel into herself in this parallel world, or
no,
did she she didn't exist in that parallel world?
No, you walk through walls, so to speak. She just could go over in the other world, and so she just brought over huge bars of gold from the other world and built up the coffers at Balmoral Palace.
And did she have to leave anything in collateral for where she got that gold?
Well, she had to put a lot on Depot Street in New York City. Okay, and if you remember a couple of years ago when Queen Elizabeth was up in Toronto, and all of a sudden there was a storm and she couldn't make the public gathering, so she zipped down to New York City. Well, she had to go down and check out what was going on in Depot City, because all of these powerhouses, let's call them the old principalities, they're all subject and weakened by the digital utopia of endless information and experience that you can imbibe and drink through your digital technology that obsolesces every old form of wealth. They're all weakened.
Okay.
Even China.
Okay.
And this is the dramatic thing that the people can see. If they can see what I'm saying, they don't have to worry about these old powerhouses. They aren't as strong as your little iPhone.
So what do
now,
they...
Now, you start taking RNA drops so that you don't have to eat as much and sleep as much and you're feeling great and your cells are being rebuilt and you're getting new cells, nobody can whoop you. You'll be here a lot longer than the Queen. But the Queen knows what we're doing, and she probably takes RNA drops.
Yeah, but I think she has some now, right?
Yes, I mean, I know the Queen, so they know what we're doing.
Right.
They like ion. They
right.
understand the role of ion. And that's the newest technology is ion. Ion is a technology.
Yes.
So I tell people to go to Achieve Radio, to Cashflow, James Martinez's show, and listen to the November 15th show. All, 7 hours of it. And listen to what I play. You'll be amazed.
Okay.
You'll get caught up, and you'll know why you have to take RNA drops.
Okay. Yes, yes.
The next speaker we could reveal?
Okay, well, we still have Scott hanging on the line. Hi, Scott. Are you still there?
Yeah, hell yeah, I'm still here.
Okay.
Yeah, he takes RNA drops occasionally.
Okay. So.
Yeah, I've experimented with them, and I've gotten much less healthy since I started taking them.
Now, listen to this, Evan. The big revolution that RNA Drops is sponsoring is there are people in California sprinkling RNA Drops on their marijuana, their weed growings.
Okay.
And incredible marijuana is being made and hashed. And No. James Martinez, we talked about it on a recent cash flow.
Yeah.
One of the last cash flows.
Yes.
And we had the guy who was growing it come on and talk. Now, what he does is he has a photograph of what these RNA-influenced weed leaves look like. And James tried it, and Al tried it, and it was no coughing, a different texture, a better experience. We're now going to become, dynamiters of the whole growing agricultural hemp retrieval.
Well,
we are going to be the hidden ground of that. Now, here's what's happening. Al can go around with just pictures of the weed that he grew, and whole dope gangs are buying it because they can read the picture. Now, what nobody buys marijuana traditionally.
Or not a picture.
You don't bait. You go and test it. You try it out. But this picture is so potent that they all say, sign me up, and they meet with Al in the parking lots and buy the stuff. So there's a whole revolution that old Mr. Scott here is going to love to like.
I want to grow some of that, but wouldn't it have to be six times more expensive, because those drops are pretty premium. I'm not talking about the weed, if you sprinkle it all over. But it just takes a sprinkle, doesn't it?
Yes.
Ah, fascinating, fascinating. Yeah, I took a bottle of Rebob a couple months ago, and it lasted forever. It lasted a long time. I was amazed with that.
Well, that's an important point here, Evan. Many people who buy our RNA Drops bottles are amazed that the stuff keeps regrowing in the one bottle. It does not stop. It's magic Harry Potter stuff.
Yeah, I think it is, but I don't know.
And he had the same experience. It doesn't seem to happen to everybody, but a lot of people report this, that the stuff does, they don't understand it. They just keep using the same bottle for months.
Well, you know what?
It never empties.
I had that experience too. It seems
even
that it's
your saint of L.A. integrity, Evan Ray, can vouch for this experience.
You know what, Scott? I really appreciate you hanging out, darling. We're coming up close to the end. I have to get off in a little bit early. So we appreciate you being here, okay, dear?
Oh, yeah, thanks. Listen to my show, Achieve Radio, Sundays at 8 p.m.
All right. There it is. Okay. Great stuff.
Everybody has their own media empire.
Yes. Yeah, that's absolutely it. So what is it? What should be still the attraction to radio and these environments if it's so 2.0 and there's 3.4.0 coming out? I mean, if Romney is 3.0, Ion must be 4.0. I mean, there's a 5.0 coming around the corner.
Yes. Now, first of all, let's be realistic here. There's not many people listening to us, Evan, compared to what... I mean, I talk to people, Ionettes, who have children, and are, say, a 13-, 14-year-old. When they come home, they don't talk to the parents. They're just on the iPhone, on the TV, not the TV, the computer, texting each other. And they don't talk. And so the mother says, why don't you guys ever talk? Oh, that's for school. They consider school as the zone where you got to talk. Now, listen to this. It's a sub-fragment sector of their multi-bodied life.
Yes.
This is what we're growing. These people have no context or any of the images that we had. They don't experience TV, radio, and these separate media. They never had any. They don't exist. They're strange artifacts like from the Renaissance. Even though they're obsessed with it because it's a rearview mirror pattern always, the law of walking backwards through the future. But they are engaged in electronic ESP, the gestural intuition that they get from looking and scanning imageries, And that's another thing. They scan the old media, but they don't stop there. And they don't even remember half of it. It's like the burglar leaves the juicy piece of meat out for the dog to be distracted by so the burglar can sneak in and make his robbery. Well, all the old media is a distracting piece of meat for the digital generation here, what I call the Morpheus generation, to surf with. It's a distracting piece of meat, and they're distracting it by pretending to be interested in it just to make their parents think that they're parents.
So
they're acknowledging the parent media just so the parents can think that they're parents. And the kids don't really go along with that stuff. They're doing strange stuff on the digital. Did you see that documentary on Justin Bieber? I watched that. Pretty interesting. It's always good to watch the latest fads of the youth tribal.
What did you find interesting about it?
This little girl says, it's all about these girls all think that, you know, Bieber is going to marry them. But here's what the little girl said. I am dedicated. I am committed. I am going to become his first wife. You get that?
Yes.
They know he'll have serial wives. They just want to be one of them. They're not looking to preserve a marriage like General Petraeus.
You know, it's so interesting. Watched a documentary with a friend, and we might be offering it as a premium here on KPFK, but a documentary on the Beatles and a crisis that happened within the Beatles that if it was revealed, they were saying there would have been such mass suicides all around the planet that they had to hide it. And it is a crisis to this day for the Beatles. And so I think that's...
What is the crisis? Do you know what it is?
Yes.
What? Paul is dead?
Yes.
Oh, come on. Now, this is really interesting, Eben. I remember that in 69 when that came out, and
yes,
nobody took it seriously. It was
right,
a bunch of nonsense. But
right,
you're showing your age here. You're the next generation, and you think it's like the Kennedy assassination for you. It's very interesting hearing you. Eben, you've become dated for me. You actually think this is your media profile. You're locked in. You know, you didn't even know there were Beatles. You know, they in the 70s, the joke was, Paul McCartney was in the band before the Wings. You know,
dude,
but
you, Bob, I'm sorry, Bob, you have,
issue.
Bob,
nobody
you have.
Nobody would have died if they found out Paul McCartney was dead. But you guys, not having lived it, are the next stage after, are projecting back into it.
Bob,
who made this stupid movie?
Oh man,
I'm gonna sue them.
Oh no, it's really quite amazing. It is really, it's amazing, man. It goes in and it links all of the hints that they put into all their album covers, all of the reverse masking, and all that stuff. It is brilliant stuff.
They went to a library for 1969, read all Rolling Stone articles, and then made a movie out of it.
It was, I'm telling you, it is well done. If you're thinking that this girl is saying, I'm going to be the first, you know, be
wife,
the first wife, then what they were saying back then is that they were thinking that there were just going to be mass deaths. Which would be very, very, you know, that would have been very interesting.
That was
the parallel.
That kind of crisis. Who could die today that would cause mass death? Is there even any kind of celebrity like that?
Well, we already had that. We already had that with Michael Jackson. And fortunately, folks did not go out and kill themselves, you know.
They were a little unhappy for a few days.
Well, it was a major step back.
And that was our first story on Achieve Radio. We had the monopoly of the story with Ion telling us that Michael Jackson did not die. He faked his death, and we were releasing 37 questions, which have now all been investigated. Whole networks have made documentaries on one question or another that we relieved. And if you go back and listen to the archives, you listen to the 37 incredible questions that we put out. And that was due to James and I, James Martinez, talking to Ion for 6 hours, where he gave us the legal details, the ABCs of the foundation and the contradictions in it.
Sure.
It's incredible.
Sure, sure. Well, come on, Bob. I mean, you have Ion. Forget about it.
That's right. I got the new computer.
Yeah,
I got
absolutely.
The real Google.
You do. You do.
Yeah, I do.
So is there, so we talked a little bit about the House of Windsor. Is there anybody that stands at her level in any of the other oligarchies? In any of the other houses?
No, she's the strongest family of all. The Turner taxes went down. Gloria Turnitax just hangs out with the present Pope, and she's weak. She's got a few castles, and that's it. The Rockefellers are gone. The Rothschilds are gone. The Warburgs are gone. The Romanovs are gone in Asia. That's not the Russian Romanovs. Another bunch of people.
Right.
The only people that are equal. There's a few quadrillionaires. There's 31 quadrillionaires in the world. Okay.
Okay.
And one of them's in Taiwan, and a Chinese person here and there. The Queen's not a quadrillionaire. She's a trillionaire. So she's not the top, but of Western dynasties, she's the top. But she's not the top in the world.
And what exactly does a quadrillionaire own? Half the planet?
He owns maybe half the solar system.
Okay, you know what? Coming up this weekend, there is going to be a conference by an individual who is an emissary of a positive ET force that's been talking about a galactic battle that has been happening. I know that you have looked at the Booties and the Lemurians, etc. Do you see, and I remember asking Ion about Commander Valiant Thor, and he said, you know, yes, he was there and wasn't able to say much more about that. What do you say about the presence of these other extraterrestrial forces?
Well, we are the top extraterrestrial. Ion is the top extraterrestrial.
But he's not extraterrestrial. He's non-physical.
Well, he's more than that. He's more than extraterrestrial. Extraterrestrial, just a bunch of chemical bodies moving around in fast.
But let's stay there.
They die and go to the guff. And where they go in the guff is what we have. We have the structure of the guff, known as ion.
Right.
Where everybody dies, too, is what we have.
Yes, but what I'm asking, Bob, isn't about ion's relationship to it. I'm asking about those ET bodies in fast ships. We have like a minute left, for one. What can you tell us?
Those are old battles. That's actually these species have an identity crisis under the digital android meme, which swallows the whole known universe. And then ions coming in. They are reacting to the showing up of ion. They're having an identity crisis among themselves, like everybody else is.
Okay.
And ion is the hidden ground, the great breakthrough. So we are the Illuminati that everybody's worried about. And yet we got the best product that no Illuminati before ever had. We got RNA drops that makes everybody happy. And so the real battle right now is the story that Ion has disappeared because JW is in jail. And when you listen to the November 15th show, you'll find out that we're very capable of creating digital information on the screen to make it look like the JW's in jail.
Okay, great. Okay, great. But you did...
That's the real battle right there. As we bring forth Cold Fusion.
Okay, good. Okay, but you did acknowledge that as things happen, people might actually come into contact with some of these physical, bodied alien beings that we have only... thought about. Okay,
Nervous Nellies. Because of ions afoot.
Fantastic. Bob, how freaking great. Thank you so much. This was definitely...
Happy Thanksgiving. Happy November 22nd.
Yes.
All of the ion stuff and all my stuff is going to be streaming on Achieve Radio in a couple of weeks.
Great. Okay, Bob, till soon.
All right.
Bye. All right, you guys, Bob Dobbs, fivebody.com, Achieve Radio, How Ionic. I hope you go there until next week. You've been listening to Project Next on KPFK 90.7 FM Los Angeles, archived at kpfk.org. Join us next week and help build the future.